Welcome back to TechNet Radio. In part four of our Private Cloud Basics series, Kevin Remde, Tom Schinder, and Yuri Diogenes discuss infrastructure as a service, or IaaS, and how this component factors into your private cloud planning. Tune in as they chat about the differences between this and software as a service and platform as a service, what security considerations you should be aware of, as well as how Windows Server 2012 and Windows Azure fits into this equation. Kevin, the mic is yours.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another Cloud Innovators Show on TechNet Radio. This is our series of cloud and business value interviews for IT managers. My name is Kevin Remde. I'm a senior IT pro evangelist on the U.S. Developer and Platform Evangelism team at Microsoft, and I'm your TechNet Radio host today. In today's discussion, which is part four of our five-part series with our guests, we're going to focus on IaaS. And by IaaS, I-A-A-S, I mean Infrastructure as a Service. And with us today, we're very fortunate again to have Tom Schinder and Yuri Diogenes. Welcome, gentlemen.
Hey, Kevin.
So quick introductions here. Tom Schinder is a 15-year veteran of the IT industry. He has been a medical doctor, actually, in the past, and then IT consultant for many years, as well as a very well-published author of many books on Windows, over 30 books on Windows, Windows networking, security, ISA server. For over a decade, ISA Server and TMG, Threat Management Gateway, were Tom's passions, and he ran a very popular website, www.isaserver.org. So if you ever worked with the ISA Server product, you know his site, definitely. Tom joined Microsoft back in December of 2009 as a member of the UAG Direct Access team. He started the popular Edgeman blog that covers UAG Direct Access. He's currently a principal knowledge engineer in the Server and Cloud Division, Information Experience Group, Solutions Group, and his primary focus now is private cloud, with special interests in private cloud networking and security. Yuri Diogenes. Yuri has been working in the IT field since 1994. He works at Microsoft as a senior technical writer in the Server and Cloud Division, Information Experience Group. Prior to joining this group, Yuri also worked at the Windows Security, and he worked at Microsoft CSS as a Senior Security Support Escalation Engineer on the Forefront Edge Security Team. He is co-author of the Forefront TMG Administrator's Companion book for Microsoft Press, co-author of three other books about Forefront, UAG, TMG, and FPE and from Microsoft Press, and also co-author of a Security Plus book. He holds several industry certifications, CISSP, ECEH, ECSA, CompTIA, Security Plus, CompTIA Cloud Essentials Certified, and on and on and on. Very, very long list. He and Tom are working currently on a new book called Windows Server 2012 Security from End to Edge and Beyond. That's going to be published by Syngress in 2013. Tom and Yuri both host a regular interview program on their own. That's from their own series, From End to Edge and Beyond, which is the Security and Private Cloud video and blog series. Gentlemen, once again, welcome. Thank you so much for speaking with us today.
Thank you, Kevin, for having us one more time.
Yeah. So in our series so far, we've introduced our listeners and our viewers to the idea of the value behind implementing the private cloud infrastructure for their businesses. We discussed the security aspects, we laid out some planning considerations and next steps, and today we're going to tackle this thing called infrastructure as a service, and as I pronounced it earlier, sometimes pronounced IaaS. Could you help us kick off this discussion by giving us a brief introduction and a definition of what we mean by infrastructure as a service and how that compares to other as-a-service items that we've heard of, such as software as a service and platform as a service?
Sure. So those are service models, first of all, right, that we can use the cloud computing capabilities to deliver services. As you said, there's the cloud software as a service, the platform as a service, and the infrastructure as a service. The one that we're going to talk about today is infrastructure as a service, and on this one, many customers are adopting this model because they do have their capabilities to manage their software, right? The consumer does not manage the underlying cloud physical infrastructure, does not have access to the switch or to the networking piece, to the storage, but it can deploy things and manage the OS and patch the OS. So the infrastructure as a service, you are taking advantage of what the cloud provider has to give to you from the cloud computer characteristics. You will not have to be concerned about the infrastructure and storage and capacity, and you're going to receive all that infrastructure to deploy the services that you want. In other words, you are going to still, when I say you, the customer, you're going to still be responsible for patching the servers, for installing the OS, deploying the applications. So it's not as, the responsibility is not as much on the cloud provider as the software as a service. Because if you think the software as a service, everything is on the cloud provider hands. It is a part of the job of the cloud provider to patch the servers, to do the maintenance, to take care of the operating system, to take care of the web services, storage, networking, everything that is not available to the consumer of the services. Pretty much the consumer will have a portal where it will do things that are available to him. So it really depends on your business model. It really depends on your business needs, which service model you're going to choose. Many small companies are going through software as a service just because they really do not have the amount of money to invest on information technology personnel. They want to Microsoft or any other cloud provider to take care of their email security, to their email infrastructure. Then they go to Office 365. Everything is nice for them. But some other companies, they are opt to go into the infrastructure as a service because they want the best of both worlds. They want to be able to control their operating system. They want to be able to harden their servers, their machine. And at the same time, they want to lower costs on upgrading storage, networking devices, have to be concerned about connectivity and things like that. So for medium and large companies, is a very natural transition to go to an infrastructure as a service.
So I kind of like the description you gave there about and a comparison of software as a service alongside of infrastructure as a service. And when we're talking about a private cloud, and it just sort of came to me just now that really for a long time companies have done a private cloud of sorts, in the sense that they're providing a software as a service if they're hosting their own email server. So, you know, everybody just uses Outlook, they connect to the Exchange server sitting in the data center. The end user doesn't have to worry about that implementation of email. They're simply using that service as provided, all software is taken care of. And the reason I make that comparison is because in a private cloud environment, now the end user, the business unit, the group that's building an application or needs a place to host their work, is requesting not an access to some software, but an actual machine. They're actually looking for some unit of computing that they can have as their own, not worrying about the fabric that supports many, many machines and the storage and network computing and the fabric of it all, but having machine resources, and that is the infrastructure. So we're providing the place where they can run those machines, correct?
Yep, that's absolutely correct.
So
it's a great example, the one that you gave, because it really goes to the idea of what you really want to manage and what you do not want to manage, and how you want to accomplish what you do today by leveraging the facility of a cloud provider. And the other aspect is very important to emphasize is about physical control. Many companies, they do not have budgets to invest a lot of money in physical security. And when they go to a cloud provider, they know that all the physical security is in place. In order to have access to that facility, you have to go through many layers of protection. And sometimes companies don't have budget to implement those layers of protection.
Very good. So are there certain roles at play here? Certainly the data center is building out and providing this management of the fabric behind the scenes, but what other roles are involved here?
So infrastructure as a service, a lot of people call it virtual machines for rent. And you as a private cloud service provider can take on a number of different roles or positions in a private cloud offering. Now there's one position where I'm the private cloud operator, I'm providing infrastructure as a service, I'm going to give you a service catalog where you can choose among different service offerings that give you t-shirt sizes, can you say, in terms of different sizes of virtual machines. Maybe you could provide some choices in terms of storage tiering, so you could have low, medium, and high performance storage. You could do the same with networking, where you could provide certain network bandwidth guarantees for the virtual machines. And the same goes with the number of processors that you might make available to the virtual machines. That's a very, what I would call a vanilla type infrastructure as a service, where all you do is you just provide the facilities for people that want virtual machines to get them. And that's very similar to a private cloud offering we have within Microsoft right now. Now, if you want to go deeper, the private cloud service operator can provide what I'll call value-added services. So instead of just providing them the core infrastructure, you can provide them services. And you can do this through some of the core platform capabilities in Windows Server 2012, as well as what you get with Virtual Machine Manager. For example, you can take advantage of our new capabilities in virtual machine monitoring so that you can say, well, I'll offer you a value-added service where if I notice that your virtual machine is down, I'll restart it for you. We could take that to the next level and perform even service monitoring, taking advantage of VMM and Server 2012, where if we notice that a service is unavailable, we will attempt to restart that service or run a script that you provide us. Now, the thing is, this is not done through a manual process, because automation is the key to the value proposition of cloud computing. So the Fabric Management Controller will automatically detect these VM or service outages and try to remedy them automatically. We could even go further and provide monitoring services. We'll say, well, as part of the images that we'll make available to you that you create your virtual machines out of, we'll include, say, System Center Operations Manager Agent, and we can give you detailed information and reports on your virtual machines and the services that are running in them. So those are just a few examples of the other types of roles we could take on as a private cloud service operator.
Actually, I think it's very interesting too, and along the lines of the different basic characteristics of a private cloud, and that idea of monitoring is also the self-service kind of goes hand in hand with that, because another aspect not only of launching processes as requested in a self-service way, but also giving the end users the power to do that monitoring, to actually have the interface into the behavior of their resources, their virtual machines, their services built on virtual machines, and then being able to drill down should there be any issues. So it becomes kind of hands-off. We've given you the ability not only to request and provision resources, but also to own and monitor and detect if there's any issues and even address those issues as they come about. So
exactly. So we provide more than just the core infrastructure. We'll also surface and make visible a piece of our management infrastructure to make you more more empowered to provide a better service.
So from a platform perspective, and here we're going right down to almost the bare metal, but I'm talking about a platform operating environment. We recently released Windows Server 2012. And so I'm wondering what this version of Windows Server, Server 2012, can offer to a provider that wants to build infrastructure as a service.
That's a really big question, because Server 2012 literally offers you hundreds of new capabilities that make it the cloud operating system. From the network perspective, we now have a networking stack that takes advantage of the new Server Message Block 3.0 protocol. Now, SMB3, everybody knows SMB is just a file server protocol. Who cares?
It's been around forever, yeah.
Exactly. It's been around since Windows for Workgroups and before, right? So, yeah, what's a big deal with Server 2012? Well, the thing is, SMB3 has new capabilities and has been completely revamped so that you can now host your virtual machine disk files and configuration files on, say, a separate file server cluster and have a separate compute cluster so that the virtual machines are running on the compute cluster and the storage is file-based storage just using regular old Windows file shares on a storage cluster. And we're able to get up to 97 and even more, I've heard recently, 97% plus direct attached storage speed over that. As a matter of fact, at TechEd in Amsterdam, we saw demonstrations of SMB3 pushing 16 megabytes per second, 4 DVDs per second. So, okay, there's a big thing for our networking and file server storage capabilities for virtual machines. We have inbox NIC teaming. You know, we don't have to deal with vendors pointing at each other saying, nope, you can't NIC team this with that. With inbox NIC teaming, we have the capability of teaming any two NICs. They could be from different vendors. They can be different speeds. No problem. No more finger pointing. Just throw the NICs in there and team them to your heart's desire. Now, from a storage perspective, we've done something that's really innovative and new that any cloud service provider will really appreciate, and that's called storage spaces. And essentially, it allows you to use commodity SAS disks, serial attached SCSI, to create LUNs like you do in a traditional SAN. Okay, folks, I know you're thinking about Windows NT disk mirroring and RAID, but it's completely different than that. So forget about NT, Windows 2000, and our previous software forms of RAID. Storage spaces is the real deal. And we've tested this with up to 96 disks, and it provides excellent performance and resiliency, three kinds of resiliency, dual mirror, tri-mirror, and parity. So we've got a great deal of resiliency in the solution, too. We also do read caching. And then, of course, from the compute perspective, the major improvements in Hyper-V. The guest operating systems can use up to a terabyte of memory. The host OS will support up to 4 terabytes of memory. The host OS can support up to 320 logical processors. Is that amazing?
That's a big machine.
That's right. So we have the scalability and the performance to support even the most ambitious private cloud environments.
And I think it's interesting to note, although I think in a private cloud environment you'd probably be going, and we're not going to talk about licensing today, but the differences between standard version of Windows Server 2012 and data centered version of Windows Server 2012 in terms of capability is zero. They're the same.
Right.
So it's all a licensing issue with regard to virtualization rights, and that's also true about the free hypervisor, because we have a free hypervisor Windows or Microsoft Hyper-V Server 2012 that has scale capabilities, same live migrations and failover clustering capabilities, and all the above. So if you already own
all
licenses,
the features, get all the features for free. The only thing you don't get though is a user interface.
That's right. Yeah,
we all love PowerShell.
That's right. Well, PowerShell, but I mean, that's what Server Manager, that's what Hyper-V Manager and Virtual Machine Manager, that's what they do. And you'll
Absolutely.
Do that from a management console.
Yep.
So, excellent. And then, yes, like you said, this is a huge topic. We've only scratched the surface about where Windows Server 2012 has provided additional value now.
I could go on for 8 hours on the subject.
And we would love to, believe me. So that's a great introduction to the platform improvements and supporting a private cloud. Now, let's talk a little bit more about security. And in particular, is there anything that a provider needs to be aware of when they're planning for infrastructure as a service with regard to security? And is there anything specifically that Windows Server 2012 can help with in that regard?
Definitely, and for both questions, to be honest. First, if you are a provider and you are building your infrastructure for infrastructure as a service, so you can receive your customers, your tenants, you need to make sure that you provide a secure infrastructure from the ground up. right? A secure infrastructure by design. So when you are planning your infrastructure as a service, you have to make sure that you have security from the hypervisor perspective, from the network perspective, the storage perspective, all the elements that will handle in somehow customer's traffic, customer VMs must be protected. You do not want one tenant of your infrastructure as a service to talk to the other tenants. You do not want to make to a VM be provisioned with data remaining from a different tenant. So you really do not want to mess up with that. But when you are building and planning your infrastructure, you need to make sure that isolation is the key thing on your planning. All the tenants must be isolated from each other. And to guarantee that, you must implement security on your hypervisor perspective in the first place and start building upon that. For example, when you with Windows Server 2012, we have a completely new hypervisor and a new Hyper-V virtual switch that offers a bunch of new capabilities from the security perspective. For example, one of the things that is very common in a scenario where you have multiple tenants connected to the Hyper-V and to the Hyper-V switch is that one tenant will provision a DHCP server, and you really do not want that DHCP server to mess up with other tenants. Imagine you are here with your customer, and then clients from that tenant start to receive IP from a wrong DHCP server. You really want to avoid that. So there is a new capability on the Hyper-V switch, virtual switch, called DHCP Guard, that will mitigate things like that to happen on your infrastructure. There will be other things that you also have in place. For example, which we want to avoid attacks to happen from one tenant to another. Both are connected to the same Hyper-V virtual switch. Remember that. So in order to provide the level of isolation from the layer 2 down on the stack, if you think about the TCP/IP model, so on the network layer and even below the network layer, you have to provide things like ARP poisoning prevention. You do not want a tenant to start attacking another tenant using ARP, which is really a dummy type of attack, but it will happen. I mean, it will go through the weakest point in the chain. So you should never ignore the dummiest attack ever, right? Because if it is open, they will exploit. So there is a new capability on the Hyper-V virtual switch called ARP poisoning prevention that will also help with not only with IPv4 type of attack, but also with IPv6. We also have things like port echoes, so you can create access controllers to allow only some VMs to talk to others. So if you have an infrastructure where you have multiple tenants and some tenants will be required to talk with each other, you can create an access control list to allow those tenants to talk with each other. And you can even go a little bit deeper, because if they require to talk only on port 80, then you can use a port echo to only allow traffic on port 80, like a firewall, right? But lower level. So you can create echoes for IP range, for different type of ports, echoes for MAC address and things like that. There is another concept very important that we introduce here, which is the concept of PVLAN, private VLAN. So the VLAN was something that was already possible to do, but now we can do a private VLAN capability with Hyper-V virtual switch. And probably one of the best things for a cloud provider to have is the capability of leveraging what you have best on the market to hook into the Hyper-V virtual switch. For that, Microsoft make available something called the Hyper-V extensible switch. So think about the scenario where you really like to have a deeper inspection on your Hyper-V virtual switch from the network perspective. In other words, one VM that is connected to one tenant is talking to another one, and you really want to do a deep inspection on that packet to understand what's going on. Wouldn't it be good if you have a firewall built into the Hyper-V virtual switch, or a malware inspection or something of that nature that you could prevent attack to happen even before go to the machine itself? It would be awesome. So what we did was we said, okay, here is something called Hyper-V Extensible Switch. It is a open thing. You can create your own extensions. You can create forward extension. You can create filtering extensions. So I'm going to make available for you and for the market to start building products to hook into the Hyper-V extensible switch. So with that, you could have partners and other vendors creating those extensible switch add-ons to help hook into the Hyper-V switch and provide those capabilities. That gives customers a freedom to choose whatever they want. They will not be only using that Microsoft built-in capabilities, but they can also purchase different solutions to hook in into the Hyper-V extensible switch and enhance that isolation and security that they are looking for.
And one extension with another too. It's not simply a replacement of the entire switch with another product. It's a flexible architecture, which I think is amazing.
Yeah, I think it was a great idea to let the market drive that. In the past, many people say, well, why Hyper-V does not come with a built-in firewall, built-in malware inspection? And I think that what the market really wants is to have the option to choose what they want to use as malware inspection and filtering and switching capability. They want to leverage the best of both worlds. So you have the great hypervisor, and now you can choose a different vendor to provide the networking capability that you want or the protection that you want.
Excellent. Good. Very good answer to that. And let's wrap things up here today by talking a little bit more about where people can go to find more information, because infrastructure as a service is definitely a big topic, and we've only scratched the surface on it and how and given some, I think, good examples on how Windows Server 2012 can help support that platform or that infrastructure for the sake of providing it as a service. Where can folks go to find more information?
Sure. We have a few resources that will help you get started. First is an article that we have that's part of our reference architecture for private cloud. That article is entitled, What is Infrastructure as a Service? We also have a good article on the key platform capabilities in Windows Server 2012 that enable you to provide a basic foundation for infrastructure as a service offering. And then we'll also make available to you as links on the landing page for this radio show, some hosting solutions that are kind of readily available now that go under the term of fast track that you can use to quickly build out an infrastructure as a service solution using software and hardware from our partners.
Excellent. So if you don't want to build it all from scratch, you can certainly go to a partner who's already got a solution built on our architecture in order to make that happen. That's excellent.
Exactly.
Well, Tom and Yuri, once again, thank you so much for your time today. I'm really excited to talk about part five, and just as a quick introduction to what we'll be talking about, we're going to actually cover identity and access management. So watch the website, watch Channel 9 and other resources or locations for our content, and watch for part five coming up very soon. And once again, thank you, gentlemen, for your time today.
Thanks, Kevin. It was great as usual.
Thank you, Kevin. I appreciate it.
All right. We'll see you next time on TechNet Radio, Cloud Innovators.